Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to All About Twine, presented on Blog Talk Radio and 1000mics.com. Our shows are also available on iTunes as a free download. Featuring winemaker, cellar master, vineyardist, and tasting expert, Ron of Florida Estates Winery. Located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida, this one-hour call-in talk show is educational.
Labels themselves are, like I say, they become an art form.
Entertaining.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is just trying to educate people and make wine less confusing and more friendly.
And all about wine.
So we're continuing with France tonight.
Call the show and go on air with us at area code 646-727-3235. That's 646-727-3235. Or post your comments and questions during the show on 1000mics.com. All About Wine starts now.
Well, thank you.
Well, thank you.
And I can't tell if we're on or not.
I think we might be.
Let me bring 1,000 mics on.
Hello.
Hello.
Welcome to 1,000 mics.
Of course.
To begin your trip, you are now live on air.
Okay. We had a little glitch there.
Yes, we did. Major glitch at the beginning.
About 7 minutes worth. We have 53 minutes left, apparently.
Yeah, well, that's all right.
That took a while. Thank you, Windows, for taking your time booting up. Anyway, my name is Mike. Well, you know what? I didn't even hear the wine intro. Did everybody else hear the wine intro or no?
Well, I didn't hear it.
Wow. I wonder how that did. Okay, so we're doing All About Wine. Tonight is on champagne, or did you want to say that? But let me go ahead and run this real quick, I guess. We'll be back in about 2 minutes and make sure everybody's connected here. Hold on.
Hello, and welcome to All About Wine, presented on Blog Talk Radio and 1000mics.com. Our shows are also available on iTunes as a free download. Featuring winemaker, cellar master, vineyardist, and tasting expert, Ron of Florida Estates Winery. Located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida. This one-hour call-in talk show is educational.
Labels themselves are, like I say, they become an art form.
Entertaining.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is it's just trying to educate people and make wine less confusing and more friendly.
And all about wine.
So we're continuing with France tonight.
Call the show and go on air with us at area code 646-727-3235. That's 646-727-3235. Or post your comments and questions during the show on 1000mics.com. All About Wine starts now.
Yeah, they actually... They,
Did you travel with us?
Yes, they did. Actually, we all came up here together. So.
Good, good. Mike went out of town. He's having himself a much-deserved
Vacation.
Vacation, yeah. Holiday, whatever.
I am. I guess it's well. It's not. I won't be here for the holiday, unfortunately. But I am here just for a week and just enjoying it so far. The weather has been fairly decent. It just rained a little bit earlier. And let me get some statistics here. But I am in our nation's capital in Tallahassee. Oh wait, I am in our state's capital. What was in that bottle? I am in Tallahassee, Florida, which is up in the north section of the Panhandle, or in the Panhandle. It is mostly cloudy. We have 61 degrees here. Tonight's going to be 56, and tomorrow's going to be warm, but with rain, about 71 degrees and 51 for the low. That's the cold front coming through. Saturday, I will be missing from here because the cold front comes through and drops the temperatures down to 37. So I'll be out. I'll be out of here by that time. And Ron is over there in the sunny part of the state, I guess. How was your weather today?
It was very pleasant. I was outside. It felt very warm. I think the high was 67 or 66, something like that.
That is good.
And it was sunshiny all day long, and just absolutely gorgeous. Just really a beautiful afternoon. So, and then we also had the same cold front hitting us Saturday. Hopefully, Saturday afternoon. We keep our fingers crossed because we have a festival Saturday.
Ah, wonderful.
And
sounds
so
good.
If the cold front comes Saturday afternoon, we won't have to worry about the rain. We've got lots of vendors and everybody coming by. You need to come and check us out. Christmas and holiday presents and Kwanzaa and everything. Alice, good chance to pick up everything. Last chance, last weekend before the holidays.
Yeah, I was just going to ask. If you want to get your gifts and everything purchased, now's the time to do it. And wine and the other items that they have there, even the items at the Festa make great gift items also. So shop for family members, loved ones, friends. Come out to the winery this Saturday. This Saturday, is it 11 a.m. to 4 p.m.?
You got it.
Okay, come out 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. and get some gifts for the holidays, for Christmas, whatever you celebrate. Now's the time to do it. So hopefully see everybody out there on Saturday. And if you mention that you heard about it on the Blog Talk Radio or 1000 Mike Show, you will you'll meet
get
Ron.
A free tasting. Oh, we'll get a free tasting.
Oh.
We'll give you a free tasting.
I just thought maybe you'd meet Ron. I was going to
Yeah, well, that's good, too. But we'll give you a free taste. You mentioned you heard this on Blog Talk Radio. We'll give you a free tasting this Saturday.
Yeah, that'd be okay, cool. Well, hey, I might just go there and say I heard it. Yeah. Let's see. So I'm on a headset right now, and I'm not used to this because now everything I do is the microphone follows me. So I'm not used to this. So if I sneeze or make some kind of stupid sound effect or anything while you're talking, it's just I'm not used to it. Usually I can back away from the microphone. If you'd like to give us a call on this crazy 1 hour, well, 48-minute show now, give us a call at area code 646-727-3235. 646-727-3235. Get on the phones right now. Give us a call. Tonight's topic, very, very delicious champagne.
Champagne. We're going to talk about champagne region. We're going to talk about the origins of champagne. We're also going to talk about serving champagne and having a little bit of the bubbly for the holidays. And actually, this gives me a good opportunity to mention the holidays. Thank you all for listening throughout the past year. We hope to continue next year, barring any complications that we may have. And we appreciate all the listeners out there, the ones who listen in archives and live and all that other stuff. It's great to know that you're out there listening to us, and hopefully have helped educate you a little bit on wines and the aspects of wines and everything else. I have had a great time doing this. I hope you enjoy it as much as I do. We will not be on the air next 2 weeks, next week being a couple days before Christmas, and then the following week, a couple days for New Year's. So we are going to take ourselves a two-week break. I believe, right, Mike? Did we?
Yes.
We agreed on that. Okay.
Yeah.
We'll
be back after the first of the year. Yeah, just stay tuned to, let's see, you're on Facebook. You can listen to or check out Florida State's Winery on Facebook. And I know what you post, I saw your other post earlier when I logged in that we're having the show tonight. So it's the last one of the year. And stay tuned there. I also post it on Twitter. There's different Blog Talk Radio, 1,000 Mics. They always have the upcoming shows and when they're happening. So there's ways to know.
Great. So a couple of weeks, and it'll be 3 weeks, won't it? Three weeks from tonight will be our next show. So
after the
first of the year.
Okay.
So champagne. Let's jump into this and try to cover champagne. When I was talking about France and different regions around the world and all that, I really didn't hit the champagne region of France. I basically ran over it and talked about it for a few minutes, but not a whole lot. I'm going to do Champagne Night and talk about Champagne Night because it is such a traditional drink during the holidays, especially New Year's. Champagne is used quite often. Champagne, while I'm on the subject of traditions, the champagne is also used a lot to celebrate sports teams winning. You'll see it in all sorts of sports. The soccer championships, they spray each other with champagne. Baseball championships, the champagne is out, the bubbly is out. A race car driver speeds around the track for 500 miles, and he wins the race, and he jumps out, and he sprays champagne on everyone, or sparkling wine, or whatever it is he has. And after Tour de France, the great motorcycle race, there's always those who are spraying champagne on everyone and all that. So it just became quite a tradition to do that. That started actually back in 1967 at the 24 Hours of Le Mans. The winner, Dan Gurney, started the tradition of spraying the crowd and each other. He got a bottle of champagne, which was donated by Moët Chandon, and sprayed everyone, and since then it has been a mainstay of a championship team or individual in lots of different sports. So just hit that lightly there about the champagne. Also used quite a bit for the holidays coming up here. Go back. Champagne. Where did it come from? Champagne is Champagne region of France. The area is located actually to the east of Paris. Most of the plantings are a little bit northeast and a little bit southeast, but all east of Paris in the northern part of the country of France. A small area, just a little bit west of Belgium, the Champagne region. The whole Champagne, there actually is a state, a region, I don't know what they call them in France, so I apologize for anyone that might be listening from there for my lack of education for that. But the Champagne region, or state or area there, does go all the way up to touch the Belgian region, and a little finger of it goes into Belgium, actually. But most of the Champagne is made in the central part of the region. There is a couple of small houses in the northern part, Champagne houses. It is originally started, the Champagne was originally started in that region. They were trying to make wine to battle, compete with the Burgundy area and the wines coming out of Burgundy. The rather envious of the Burgundy wines and the reputation that the wines came from that area. So they sought to produce wines that were equal, if not better, than the Burgundy area. But because of the region, because of the northern climate, it couldn't really grow good red grapes there. And because of the extreme temperature changes and all that, the Burgundy region had more of an influence from the rivers and stuff, and so they couldn't match it. It was a colder winters, and the grapes that they were getting were high levels of acidity and low sugar levels, and basically lighter, thinner wines than from the Burgundy wines. So they decided that they would go with something else. Now, it's a popular belief, and actually legend, if anything, that says that Dom Perignon invented sparkling wine, which really isn't true. The oldest record of sparkling wine came back from the Benedictine monks in the Abbey of St. Hilaire near Carcassonne in 1531. They were making a type of champagne then. It was about a century later, an English scientist and a physician by the name of Christopher Meret, M-E-R-R-E-T, with documents adding the sugar to the finished wine to create the second fermentation. That was 6 years before Dom Perignon set foot in the Abbey at Tavars, and almost 40 years before the Benedictine monk was claimed to invent champagne. So it's the history of Dom Perignon inventing it, really, he really didn't invent champagne, but he did invent a lot of advances in the drinking and production of champagne. The corks, he invented the wire closure at the top called the mousselet that holds the cork in because of the fermentation and stuff like that. So Dom Perignon was very instrumental in a lot of stuff, but not in the invention of champagne. Champagne actually was first created by accident. It was called the devil's wine because all of the sugar wasn't fermented out of some of the first casks and some of the first bottles, and they exploded. And it was always a guess if it was going to explode or if it was not going to explode. And it was labeled the devil's wine because at any time you can have a bottle or a cask explode because of the bubbles and the fermentation. Because it was being bottled before it was the fermentation had finished, the classic method of champagne called the method champenois, I believe is pronounced, wasn't invented until the 19th century, approximately 200 years after Christopher Meret actually documented the process. He told about the process and documented the process 200 years later. It became an actual method that was used. The 19th century exploded in the 1800s. Starting out the beginning of the 1800s, champagne production from the region was about 300,000 bottles a year. And by 1850, just 50 years later, that had jumped up to 20 million bottles a year. It was being shipped everywhere in the world. Everyone was drinking champagne. It became something that even the poor could afford a bottle or two of the champagne. Champagne houses tried to promote it as a special thing. They said this. They were the kings and the powerful people around the world. They were shipping it to England, and the kings of England were drinking it, and all of these the royalty everywhere and all. And it was affordable for the common man. And so because of this, because of the fact that the common man could afford it and it was being drank by the kings, it made the common man feel a little bit better. He could have this drink, this bubbly nectar that the kings were drinking, and be able to feel for a moment there that he was as good as them. The champagne back then was actually sweeter than it is today, too. It tended to be a higher sweetness in it, brought out by the addition of sugar into it. And I'll tell you in a few minutes how they about adding sugar to it. But it was a sweeter wine than it is now. Pierre Jouet in the 1846 vintage around there was shipping wine to London, or champagne to London, and didn't make it as sweet. He started to cut back on the sweetness, and he called this designation Brut, B-R-U-T, pronounced Brut, Brut Champagne, which basically is the modern champagne. And it was created for the British in 1876, just about the time they were fighting the Americans, starting to fight the Americans on the Revolutionary War. They were shipping in all this stuff from France, all this champagne. The law concerning champagne, I'm going to go into something a little bit more about the area, the region of Champagne. Not a big area at all, one of the smallest areas, actually, in France for a wine area. It consists of about four specific regions, and I apologize over and over for my pronunciation, the Aube, A-U-B-E, Cezanne, S-E-Z-A-N-N-E, the Côte de Blanc, C-O-T-E-D-E-S-B-L-A-N-C-F, the Vallée de Lamont, and the Marne River is what runs through the whole country, the major river that runs through the whole region of Champagne. And then the Montagne de Reims, M-O-N-T-A-G-N-E-D-E-R-E-I-M-S. These are the five major regions that are grape growing regions in the Champagne area. The laws governing this, the Champagne community, Champagne laws, has developed a rigid, comprehensive set of rules and regulations. They have really almost gone overboard. They have stated the suitable growing places, the most suitable grape types. And again, most champagne uses three grape varieties, although others are allowed. And this was interesting because a lot of things I was checking on this mentioned that it was limited to three. It actually isn't. There's quite a few different grapes that can be used in champagne. But the three most common ones are the ones that you hear about and the ones that are actually used more than anything else. We still there?
Yes.
Sorry.
Okay. This thing's creaking.
Heard some frightening noises. I
got worried.
Oh. Oh, that's right. You said it picked up all of your noises.
Well, yeah. It's on a. Never mind. It's on some kind of little stand thing, I guess. But
oh, okay.
Whatever fits on this headset.
So that they can use different types of grapes, but three main grapes are used. there are, within the Champagne region, there are approximately 200, over 261 Champagne houses. These are places that purchase some or all of their grapes. You don't have to grow your own grapes to be a Champagne house. You can make it. And there are over 19,000 growers of grapes in the Champagne region. So, you know, when I say 19,000, it doesn't mean that they've got, you know, 50, 60 hectares or acres out there or anything. It just simply means that they could have a small amount of whatever, but they are all different and all grow the grapes. The large houses own just over 12% of all the vineyards. And but the large houses are responsible for over 70% of all the sales. So most of the production obviously comes from purchased grapes. Now, three main varieties of grapes, the Chardonnay, the Pinot Noir, and the Pinot Meunier. I'm not sure. Meunier. And I tried to find how to pronounce this, and I couldn't. Find how to pronounce this. And so, Pinot Meunier, I'm not sure. But those are the three main grapes. Chardonnay, about 26% of all grapes planted are Chardonnay, 37% in the Pinot Noir, and 37% in the Pinot Meunier. These are, adds up to about 100%, but it's really not 100%. There's other plantings of other grapes in the area. And also, the Champagne laws dictates the length of requirements for viticulture. Includes the pruning, the vineyard yield, the degree of pressing, and the time that the wine must remain on the lees before bottling. It limits the release to the maintain a market price. It just very strict, concise rules and regulations. And only when it meets these requirements can it be labeled Champagne. The government also controls wine appellations throughout France. And during my previous programs on France, we discussed that. But the Champagne region tends to be a little bit more strict, if you will. Now, these legal boundaries and these laws were set up in 1927. They are looking at doing some major changes, after scientific review and looking at the boundaries. And there's different villages that want to be included in the Champagne region and within the Champagne designation, and different vineyards that want to be doing all that. So expanding the boundaries, changing the how it's written and all that stuff could impact pricing. It could impact Champagne as we know it. They don't know yet. They're still under review. As it stands now, anything will not change until after 2020. So we've got about 9 years in a couple of weeks to see the changes. Champagne. I have been calling it Champagne. Technically, only from the Champagne region of France can it be called Champagne. Sparkling wine made throughout the world. You can find sparkling wine everywhere. It is controlled all over. The European Union and many other countries, the name Champagne is legally protected. It's from actually the Treaty of Madrid in 1891, which designated only the sparkling wine made in that region and adhering to the standards defined can be called Champagne. That was reaffirmed in the Treaty of Versailles after World War I, and a lot of other countries are accepting it more and more. Most recently, Canada, Australia, and Chile has signed on with Europe to limit the use of Champagne. The United States acknowledges that Champagne is a specific region, but we have never agreed to ban the term Champagne from all U.S. wines until recently. And recent laws and rules have stated that we can no longer name wine champagne. It has to be sparkling wines, except any wines that were called champagne in the United States before 2006 may continue to use the word champagne, only, though, if it's accompanied by the wine's actual origin. So you can say, this is a champagne from California. This is a champagne from New York. This is a champagne from Washington, Oregon, whatever, if you state that. But if you were doing that before 2006, after 2006, that stopped. You can't call it champagne. It has to be sparkling wine. Most places in the United States don't use champagne anyway. There's certain regions that are protected, and key regions in the U.S. where they make it, Napa, Sonoma Valley, Paso Robles, Oregon, Walla Walla, Washington. A lot of these places make a champagne, which they do label it as that because they've been doing it for a number of years. I stopped by a couple of wine stores, and I was looking at the champagne just to get an idea of what it says on the bottles and stuff like that. And I was noticing all these different terms. Instead of saying sparkling wine on most of them had different terms. Spain uses cava, cava, C-A-V-A, which means sparkling wine or champagne. Now, these are all used in the traditional method called method traditional, which is the second fermentation process in the bottle. Italy designates it as Spumante, and we have all heard of Asti Spumante, Asti being the region of the Spumante, but Spumante in Spain meaning simply sparkling wine. A lot of the Italian Spumante, Asti Spumante, is very popular because it uses the Muscat grape and tends to make for a sweeter wine. And it also uses DOCG Asti, which is the Italian designation for higher quality wine. In South Africa, if you pick up a bottle and you see Cap Classique on it, that is a sparkling wine. In Germany, Sekt, S-E-K-T, is a sparkling wine. Other French wines that do a sparkling wine cannot call it champagnes. They must call it just a sparkling wine from their region. And legal authorities do destroy and season destroy lots of bottles every year coming out of France that have on the champagne label on sparkling wines that are not legally from the Champagne region. There is an ongoing thing continuously trying to let people understand and realize that champagne and sparkling wine and the methods that's used and stuff like that. One other note here, which I thought was rather funny. The village of Champagne, Switzerland, has traditionally been making a still wine and labeled it champagne for years and years and years. Their earliest record of making a champagne coming out of Switzerland dates back to 1657. So for many years, they have made a champagne from the Champagne town or village of Champagne, Switzerland. In accord with the EU, the European Union, the Swiss government said in 1999 that by 2004, the village would phase out the use of the name Champagne. They did. Sales dropped from 110,000 bottles a year to less than 32,000 bottles a year after the change. In 2008, the village started to sign petitions, and they are fighting the Swiss government and the EU to be able to use their name again. They said it is destroying their income and all that. It's dropped to less than a third of what it was when they labeled it as Champagne Switzerland. So that is an ongoing battle right now. We don't know how that's going to turn out, but that might be interesting. Champagne is made by a simple method of, this is called the method traditional. What they do is they take the grapes, and again, the three major grapes, but it can be any of a number of other grapes from that area. They take the grapes and do the first fermentation. This is just the classic fermentation of the white grapes, or the red grapes, and take off its skin and make the white juice. Then they do what they call an assemblage. Now, this is a blend. This is a blend of any number of years. Most champagne houses save their grapes from certain years and save their vintages and blend them. Every once in a while, you will find a single year, a vintage champagne. If the harvest is exceptional, it is declared a vintage, and the wines are labeled as a single year vintage rather than blending it. Now, if a wine is blended, it must stay, must ferment in the bottle for 1.5 years. That's the law, again, one of the Champagne area laws. If it is vintage, it has to stay in the bottle for at least 3 years. So calling a wine vintage does require you to age it longer before you release it. A lot of wineries don't. They will use exceptional grapes and make them still blended, but not have to blend as much, and use the poor grapes and blend it with the exceptional. So it's one method. Next, they do what they call liqueur de tirage. And this is where they add sugar, yeast, and liquor to the still wine in the bottles. What this does is it starts a second fermentation. The sugar and the yeast start fermenting again. This is a second fermentation that happens in the bottle. While this is in the bottle, they stack these things on racks. The racks are holes and boards, and they're all lined up, and all these champagne bottles are all lined up. They are sealed with a crown cap, like a beer bottle cap, and they are on an angle in these boards. And they go through and turn these. They have a person that comes through and turns these, and that can be either done mechanically or manually. Manually is very labor intensive, but this process is called remuage, R-E-M-U-A-G-E, or riddling, R-I-D-D-L-I-N-G. Riddling, the people who do this can do it extremely fast. It's just they turn a quarter of a turn and they can just run right down it and take care of it, and it's amazing to see them. I've watched them do it before, and you're astonished how fast they do it. But they turn these bottles a quarter of a turn each time, and this has to be done quite often over a period of the time that the second fermentation is going on, so that the lees, or all the stuff that's fermenting in there, settles into the neck of the bottle. Once this is all settled into the neck of the bottle, they remove the sediment, the dead yeast from the neck. Now, the process of this is usually done by freezing the neck, freezing the end of it, and it freezes all this stuff in the neck, and they remove the crown cap, or the beer bottle cap, if you will, and the pressure of the champagne pops this out, and then they reseal it again quickly to keep the rest of the pressure in there and to keep it keep the bubbly in there and the champagne inside. So they remove this from the neck of it. And then they top that off with a little wine and a small amount of sugar. And this the sugar continues to cause the bubbling. And this, depending on how much sugar you put into this and how sweet you want this and what you're doing with it, is the amount of sugar that you end up putting into this. There are lots of different types of sweetness on champagne. You can get some that are very sweet. You can get some that are semi-sweet or brut. There's a variety of sweetness in champagnes, and this variety of sweetness is determined by the amount of sugar that is dropped in on the the last bottling on the dosage when they top it off. Usually not much. It doesn't take a lot in there. And the sweetness that we put in champagnes and stuff like that is the sugars we put in a small amount. You're measuring grams per liter, which a very small amount of grams per liter. I'm trying to find a charger. I had a chart, and I was going to tell you about how much per liter, and I can't seem to find it now. I had it here. I was going to print it out, and that's my bad. I really should have, shouldn't I? Oh, well. So the grams per liter tells you how much sugar, how much sweetness is in, let's see. What? No, it's not there. Oh, here we go. This might be in here. Is this it? Oh, no. That's the technical aspect of it. I was reading that. That's not something that you would probably find interesting. But grams per liter, brute natural, brute zero. This is less than 3 grams of sugar per liter. Extra brute, less than 6 grams of sugar per liter. And then brute, less than 12 grams. So up to 12 grams, if you want to look at this in another direction, on the brute, only up to 6 on the brute, extra brute, are, and then 3, up to 3 grams in the brute natural. So the brute is going to be a little bit sweeter champagne. And that's the big one that's usually sold quite a bit in this country now, too. So that's the amount of sugar added to it. So that is your method traditional used for champagne, for champagne production. And then when they put it back in, recork it quickly, and usually add a little sugar or syrup or whatever. Sometimes it's syrup, a little dosing, a little carbon dioxide to continue the bubbles and continue the bubbling in it. Now, the bubbles of a champagne. This is the classic here. These are the ones. The bubbles in a champagne, you get more bubbles. And this is something that I found extremely interesting. You get more bubbles not because of the flute glass, but because of the imperfections on the side, the insides of the glass. The glass is not completely and positively smooth. It has imperfections. And so the bubbles catch in these imperfections. That's what causes your bubbles coming up. If you will pour a glass of champagne and you will look at it, you'll see different areas where the bubbles seem to be coming out of. That's because it got caught there. That's because the nucleation gets caught on the effervescence, and nucleation get caught on the glass, and it causes the bubbles. Also, when you wipe your glass, when you wipe the glass off and use a towel or something, the fibers from the towel can also cause some bubbles, not as much as the imperfection of the glass. That's why some champagne glasses are etched. The insides are etched. They could be etched on the inside with a company name or a restaurant name or any number of ways to do it, but they're etched, which will cause a lot more bubbles to come up from that spot of the glass. The etching can be done with acid or lasers or etching tools or any number of things, but it causes the bubbles to come up a lot more. So if you're out somewhere and you get yourself a glass of sparkling or champagne and you see a whole bunch of bubbles, look for etchings inside or something, because some of them do it to get the more bubbles out of it. Dom Perignon was originally assigned or charged with the task of getting rid of the bubbles, since the pressure in the bottles caused them to burst in the cellar. His first job was to get rid of those bubbles because you were having problems. Back in the early 18th century, the bubbles were causing the bottles and the casks to break so much that the monks were wearing great big masks, looked like baseball catcher's mask, that type of a thing over the face. And sometimes when one bottle or one keg or cask exploded, it could cause a chain reaction, And it was noted that some sellers will lose anywhere from 20 to 90% of their bottles of this explosion because of the instability of the bubbles. Champagne producers, there's lots of them. I mentioned earlier how many different vineyards are there, and there's designations for a lot of different ones, designations for the different areas. I told you there are companies, there are wine merchants under certain names and stuff like that. I won't get into that. That's a little bit more technical. Champagne has been marketed for years as, like I said, a very consumer-friendly drink. It not only can be used as a celebration champagne, but it's also used to send off ships to producer. What's my word I'm looking for here? Christen.
Christen, yep.
You know, Christen ships. They take the champagne bottle and break it on the bow of the ship, and it christens the ship. It is noted that if the bottle does not break, it's bad luck for the ship. And it can't help me. I can't help but think of the video a couple years ago when the Queen of England tried to break a bottle over a ship, and it took her like six tries, and then somebody finally had to come up and do it for her. That ship is doomed. But they use it to christen ships and again, for celebration and stuff. The grape varieties, I told you a little bit of the three main ones, those being the classic three grapes of the Champagne region, the Chardonnay, the Pinot Noir, and the Pinot Meunier. But there are lots of other types of grapes that are used. Most Champagnes are made from a blend of Chardonnay and Pinot Noir, 60-40. If you see a champagne labeled Blanc de Blanc, which is white from white, that means that the champagne was made with 100% Chardonnay grape. If you see one that is labeled Blanc de Noir, that means white from black. And those are grapes, champagne grapes of the Pinot Noir and Pinot Meunier. Those are both black grapes, are very dark skinned grapes. And they just use the juice of one or the other, or even mix them and make a Blanc de Noir, white from black grape. There are rare uses of other grapes. Less than 2%, actually less than 1% of all the grapes planted throughout the Champagne region is of other grapes. But other grapes are found there, and they can be used. The Gamay vines of the region were scheduled to be uprooted in 1942, but World War II popped out. So in 1962, they were all the Gamay vines were destroyed in the area. The Pinot Noir and Pinot Meunier are the backbones, basically, of the Champagne region. Chardonnay gives a lot of acid from the areas because of the cool weather and the climate in the area. The Chardonnay tends to be a lot more acidic, and the Pinot Noir and the Pinot Meunier settle it down, calm it down, and give it a little bit more of a depth. That's why you can find rosé champagnes, because they leave the skin in contact with a little bit more and give you a rosé champagne, which is actually very good. I've had a couple of rosé champagnes, and they are really, really quite enjoyable. When you when they blend champagnes, it's again from different vintage and different vineyards and everything. Although once a house or once a champagne maker starts doing champagne in a certain style, he will try to use the same vineyard, try to use the same grapes, try to use pretty much everything the same, simply because it is a style that he has, a method that he uses, and a style he has, and you're not going to see a whole bunch of change. He's not going to bounce around from year to year. In 2009, a bottle of 1825 Pierre Joyeux Champagne was opened and 12 of the world's top wine tasters tasted it. And they said it was great. They said it had notes of truffles and caramel in the taste, and it was very aromatic, and it was fantastic. There are still two more bottles from that vintage in existence. So if you have a little extra pocket change, you might want to get one. You can always bid on it. But before you do, there is also 168 bottles were found in July 2010 on a shipwreck in the Baltic Sea. These were analyzed and shown that they are from the long-defunct House of Jagar, and the shipwreck was dated between 1800 and 1830, and so they think that these predate the 1825 Pierre Jouet champagne bottles. These have been examined by experts, 168 bottles of them. No, I could find nothing that anyone has tasted or any tasting notes on them, but they're scheduled to be sold at auction in 2011, and they're estimating that each bottle should be sold for around 40,000 pounds or about $70,000. So again, if you have a little bit of pocket change and you want to spring for the oldest champagne still in existence, there you go. Sometime in 2011, check with the auction houses.
Also let Ron and I know so we can share some.
Yes, by all means. Yeah, so we would like a little bit of that ourselves since I turned you on to the information. Champagne corks, everyone's familiar with the mushroom head of it. They are an amalgamated cork, which means simply that they're put together by different pieces. They're not one piece. They are different pieces. The older a champagne is, the smaller the bottom part of the mushroom will be after it dries out. You get a very young champagne that you pop open the cork, the bottom will flare out real big. The older the champagne, the smaller that will flare out. Interesting little point there. So if someone says, here, this one's really old, and you pop it open and it flares out real big, then demand your money back. Champagne is enjoyed in a flute glass, champagne flute. Now, the original design, the original mold of the champagne glass was said to come from the left breast of Marie Antoinette as a birthday present to her boyfriend, the king. They actually made the mold out of that. Not that her left breast was long and pointy. It was more round, and they do suggest that you do not use glasses of that type to enjoy champagne because they will let out too much of the nose and over-oxygenate it and everything else. Champagne should be served cold, ideally 7 to 9 degrees Celsius, which is about 45 to 48 degrees Fahrenheit. They have champagne buckets. When you open a champagne, be careful. It is under great pressure. You need to take the bottle, hold the cork. I do recommend putting a towel over the end of it. Then that way, when it pops, it will not fly out and injure someone or yourself. Turn the bottle, hold the cork and turn the bottle, and pushing the cork up a little bit each time as you turn it. So turn the bottle, a little pressure, turn the bottle, a little pressure, and it will pop out. The colder the champagne is, the less you will get on the pop. So if you chill it to the perfect 45 to 48 degrees Fahrenheit, you will get what is sometimes called a, or the French refer to it as la soupire amoureux, or the loving whisper. This is just the sound as the cork pops out. The warmer that is, the further it's going to fly. And there are champagne cork contests every year all over the world. You can probably look that up and find one for yourself. Pouring champagne, pour it down the side of the glass. Don't pour it down the middle. It's always pretty and fun to see the bubbles come up, but you pour it down the side, and you don't get a head. You don't want a head on it, sometimes referred to as a mousse. There's been studies and books and everything, one particular book on the losses of dissolved CO2 during champagne serving. It says that get it cold, reduce the gas in it, and it gives you a better tasting champagne. And one last note on champagne, it does have health benefits. They find that drinking a moderate amount of champagne can help the brain cope with trauma of a stroke, could help Alzheimer's and also Parkinson's disease. The high amounts of antioxidant polyphenols in the sparkling wine help prevent brain deterioration due to the oxidative stress from in the brain. And they have tested this on mice with the Blanc de Blancs and the Blanc de Noir and found that the mice put under stress perform much better and have less brain cell deterioration from drinking the champagne.
Wow.
So if for no other reason, you can always say, this is for my brain.
Or for the mice. I don't know.
Or for my health. I'm battling Parkinson's or Alzheimer's. But there you go, champagne. Enjoy it this holiday. It's always good. And you don't have to just enjoy a holiday. You can enjoy it anytime.
Yeah. Enjoy it frequently.
Enjoy it frequently. By all means, yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
And sleep twice. I was, like I said, I stopped by some stores. I was seeing different ones from different parts of the world for, you know, $8, $9 for a bubbly. I mean, that's reasonable.
That's not bad.
No, not at all.
Okay. Well, this completes the last show of 2010, and we have done quite a few of them this year. You can find them on iTunes or in the archives on Blog Talk Radio, 1000 Mics. Just do a search for us or look at our show link, and all the shows are on there. Probably the best place is if you search for us on iTunes. So we will see you next year. And I think I figured out the date is January 6th. And,
is it? Okay.
Yeah, that's 3 weeks. I believe it's 3 weeks. I hope it is. So that'll be January 6th, a new year, and we will continue with the shows on the U.S. wines and U.S. wineries, whatever our next date
is. Iowa, I believe.
Iowa.
Will be our next.
Okay.
Iowa.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was like, I got to look at my alphabet. Thanks again.
Iowa.
Don't forget.
I visited some wineries in Iowa. I think I'll call one of the people I visit up there and see if they can join us on the show.
Excellent. Okay. Don't forget, everyone. Got 90 seconds. Don't forget that there is a wine fest this Saturday, December 18th, from 11 a.m. until 4 p.m., located at Florida State's Winery. Definitely want to check that out. It's going to be a great time, and should be a great day out there to go to the wine fest. And, again, mention that you heard us on Blog Talk Radio or 1000 Mics. You listen to the show, and you will get a very good deal on a wine tasting. And you definitely want to do that because it goes through all the wines that they offer and tells you everything about it. And it's a very good presentation and very good wine as well. 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida. 25241 State Road 52. Call direct at 813-996-2113. 996-2113 if you're in the Tampa area, 813 area code. Or email corp@flewn.com, corp@flewn.com. Visit them on, almost said MySpace, I don't know why. Visit them on Facebook or on their website at floridaestateswines.com. And I guess that's going to do it, Ron. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
It's been a great
year. Happy holidays, everyone.
Happy holidays to everybody, and have a happy and safe new year. Remember, we want you to drink the wine and the champagnes, but we also want you to do it responsibly and don't get behind the wheel.
Okay? Definitely.
Or our next show is going to be very angry if you do. So thank you all for listening. We'll see you all next
time. Thank you all for listening.
Thank you. Which one?
Five, four,
I forgot. Which two?
One, five,